is my old friend. I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its scenes while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone. Turn my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence.
Welcome back to our second hour of tonight's Perspectives on America. Jeff Bennett here. This could well prove to be an unusual hour, which you will begin to understand fairly soon. There's a piece that a longtime friend and contributing writer, Al Benson, sent me several days ago. And the headline itself says almost everything. If you want truth, government is the last place to get it. Boy, if that isn't the truth, huh? I mean, has anyone noticed lately how often someone in a government position has been shown to be lying to us, with the Biden-Obama regime, the amount of political BS has proliferated astronomically. Just about anyone from this regime that gets a 10-second spot on the news, from Biden's idiotic press secretary to the man who does more work in an hour than most people do all day himself, has been caught in egregious falsehoods to the point where they don't even try to convince you that you're telling the truth anymore. They just spin their horrendous political windies and almost dare anyone to contradict them. Of course, if you do dare to contradict them, the prostitute press will accuse you of spreading misinformation. We've finally reached the day where telling the truth, my friends, is a crime, and spreading lies has become a government virtue. Sadly, all of this is not a new situation. Government has been doing this for decades, maybe even centuries, if you check back a ways. How many of you still remember the Warren Commission report dealing with the JFK assassination? How many of you believe it? Thankfully, not too many, because it was a crock, and most people with a brain figured out that early on. We were lied to about the Gulf of Tonkin affair that got us into the Vietnam War. We were lied to about the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty back in the 1960s. We were even lied to about the attack on the Maine that got us into the Spanish-American War in 1898. And the list goes on and on and on. Do I even need to mention here that we were also lied to about what really happened and who was responsible for the Lincoln assassination? More people tend to believe the government's version of this one than some of the others, because it happened so long ago, and most folks today have been trained to disregard old history that was made by dead white males. And yet the history of that pivotal event may well have set the stage for many of the government lies that we've had foisted upon us for so long. You know, I went to Denny's last night. First of all, because I'd eaten dinner earlier, I forgot to take my meds. And many hours later, I had to get something to eat. I just saw him going up today to get me some pancakes. They got some very special pancakes. Right, I got a brand new cook working up there. I had a little talk with him later. Waitress that, I think it's the second time I'd met her, she remembered me. Remember what I ordered the last time. We had a very interesting conversation. Spent considerable amount of time talking about one of my websites, metropolis.cafe. She was fascinated by it, got on it and started looking. She'll spend some time there today. She'll send me an email. It's a site that I've been doing massive amount of work on lately. I mentioned during the last hour, near the end, that the program I did last Thursday, I don't know what the date was, I have to look it up to see. The 4th, 4th April. I could have thrown in the towel when I finished that program. I can't sit here right now, can't even tell you what I even talked about. But it affected me as a broadcaster, as the so-called deliverer. Not that deliverer, I wouldn't try to lay claim to that. That program affected me so much, I did not sleep well that night, the next night. Maybe it wasn't until late Saturday after I'd done a bunch of work in the yard and the gardens that I kind of shook it out. But one thing has led to another. And I mentioned late last night I was working on a project. A couple of days before, I began working on another project. Very time-consuming on both of these. Now, I commented late in the program, there's a good chance I will not be doing a health-related program tomorrow. That could be a mistake. I may wish that I had not done tonight's second hour and tomorrow night's second hour, what I have planned on two nights in a row. Things are coming to me, ladies and gentlemen, that are shocking the living daylights out of me. And they're very time consumptive to get these things put together in a proper format. I spent a considerable amount of time with a post that I made late last night, and I strongly urge you read it. It is one of the most well-written pieces that I have ever read. Dealing with this EV garbage, these overpriced, god-awful cars. It's horrific. There's very intense links in here. This was so important that every single link I ensured was embedded in here. This was not available in the Breitbart's online. It's part of their digest. It comes out in the form of an email. And it was too good for me not to grab. And they talk about the importance of carbon, how it is far more valuable to us than this other nonsense that they're trying to cram down our throats. This guy Biden is doing stuff, and he's being directed. Come on. You know it. I know it. This guy doesn't make one decision. Not that it's worth listening to. It's unbelievable. And now we begin to move forward. Tonight's second hour. And I'm going to tell you, we are going to be breaking for a commercial at the bottom of the hour. But this piece was so profound to me. And the more I read it, the more I got into it, the more I felt that I could not ignore it. Reminded me in some respects of a movie that I saw back in the 1960s. I'm concerned that we are on the brink of facing the day of nuclear Armageddon. What? Why would you say something like that, Bennett? Because there are newly declassified documents that reveal in macabre, minute-by-minute detail what the end of the world would be like. And why those vaporized instantly by an atomic bomb will be the lucky ones. What? Tomorrow, an intense hour will be done sharing with you one of the most amazing pieces that Justin Smith has ever provided me. It becomes a follow-up to that which I'm about to share with you. This is spooky stuff. The story that I'm about to share with you talks about what the moments after a nuclear missile launch could look like. It's all based on facts sourced from exclusive interviews with presidential advisors, cabinet members, nuclear weapons engineers, scientists, soldiers, airmen, special operators, Secret Service, emergency management experts, intelligence analysts, civil servants, and others who've worked on these macabre scenarios over the decades. As the plans for general nuclear war are among the most classified secrets held by the U.S. government, this scenario postulate that we're postulating here takes the reader, the listener, up to the razor's edge of what can legally be known. Declassified documents, obfuscated for decades, fill in the details with terrifying clarity. And because the Pentagon is a top target for a strike by America's nuclear armed enemies, in the scenario that I'm about to share with you, Washington, D.C. would get hit first with a 1 megaton thermonuclear bomb. A bolt out of the blue attack against D.C. is what everyone in Washington, D.C. fears most. And those words from Andrew Weber, former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear, Chemical, and Biological Defense Programs. Bolt out of the blue is how U.S. Nuclear Command and Control refers to an unwarned or large nuclear attack. 1 megaton thermonuclear weapon detonation begins with a flash of light and heat so tremendous it would be impossible for the human mind to comprehend. The Lincoln Memorial would burst with the heat of the Pentagon blast a mile away. So too would the nearby Jefferson Memorial, whose famed white marble pillars would crumble to dust. The strike on D.C. would initiate the beginning of an Armageddon-like nuclear war that would almost certainly follow. There's no such thing as a small nuclear war. That is an oft-repeated phrase in Washington. A nuclear strike on the Pentagon would be just the beginning of a scenario, the finality of which would be the end of civilization as we know it. This, my friends, is the reality of the world in which we live. The nuclear war scenario proposed could happen tomorrow or later tonight. The world could end in the next couple of hours, warns General Robert Keller, former commander of the United States Strategic Command. A 1 megaton thermonuclear weapon detonation begin with a flash of light and heat so tremendous it would be impossible for the human mind to comprehend. 180 million degrees Fahrenheit. That's 4 or 5 times hotter than the temperature at the center of the sun. Take a look at Washington, D.C.'s subways, known as the Metro. Would become a furnace just a few seconds after the blast. All oxygen would be sucked out of its tunnels. Passengers who avoided burning to death would suffocate instead. These are the kind of things that we could be facing. I look at the corners of the world that our leaders in this country have us stuck in one way or the other. Iranians are threatening to attack. We've got our mess in this ongoing thing with Israel and Palestine or whatever the heck they want to call it all. That's going to be a very integral part of tomorrow's program, by the way. What other parts of the world have we got our fingers in? I mean, I remember reading and sharing for so many years that our military is just banded all over the world. We've got our nose in 100-some-odd different countries for one damn reason after another. And the people that are serving in our military, too many of them are questionable at best. Maybe that's why Joey's allowing all these illegals to come in, so we can go ahead and get them into our military. Oh, isn't that exciting, huh? We've got our own wars to fight at home right now. We need our military at home defending this country. Stop being involved with the rest of the world's problems. And in some cases, creating some of the rest of the world's problems. These are the things that depress me. I look at the time I spent in Nam. 21 months. I've talked about this a lot. When I came home, I wasn't expecting a hello, job well done, welcome home, none of that kind of stuff. I came home quietly. A week or so later, I found a job and went to work. Worked for a very interesting company out of Chicago. Right now, I can't even think of their names. But I can see the people's faces. I can see the yard that we worked in. They were support for a construction company. We dealt with very specific things for building major commercial buildings. I can see the products. Can't think of what they're called anymore. Remember the guy that hired me? I was actually hired to be somewhat of an architect. I'd had a certain degree of training with it. I had the knowledge of it. But agreed that before I would move to the desk, I wanted to work in the yard, helping to get things loaded, to go off to various jobs. A lot of major work they were doing in downtown Chicago. And he agreed to that so that I could understand exactly what I was drawing, what I was in my architecture, so that I fully understood exactly how each and every one of these pieces were used. I got to know all the drivers, most of whom were black. A few weeks later, I met the woman that I'm still with all these years later. I got out in 70, folks. Left Nam on the 6th and got mustered out of the military on the 7th of January. Met my wife a little over a week later, week and a half later. Blind date, come to think of it. Went to see big jazz star downtown, Chicago. But these are the kind of things that we did. I didn't run around talking about my time in the military. I didn't brag about what I did. War is war. It sucks. But I took massive pride in the work that I did as a so-called patient protector, flying around the country, picking up wounded, friend or enemy alike, that had been captured, the enemy, of course. Koreans were our allies. South Koreans, of course. Australians. Number of other countries who I can't remember. My first flight was helping to deliver a mountain yard baby at 3,000 feet at about 2 o'clock in the morning in the dark in a helicopter. We're not having those kind of days anymore. We're stuck in hell. We're stuck in a mess. Back to our story. In the first fraction of a millisecond after the bomb strike, Pentagon outside Washington, D.C., there would be light. Soft X-ray light with a very short wavelength. The light superheats the surrounding air to millions of degrees, creating a massive fireball that expands at millions of miles per hour. And within a few seconds, the fireball has increased to a diameter of a little more than a mile. Its heat so intense that concrete would explode. Metal would melt or evaporate. Stone would shatter. People instantly converted into combusting carbon. And the five-story, five-sided structure of the Pentagon and everything inside its 6.5 million square foot of office space would explode into superheated dust, and all the walls shattering with the near simultaneous arrival of a shockwave. All 27,000 employees would perish instantly. Not a single thing in that fireball would remain. Nothing. Ground zero be zeroed. Traveling at the speed of light, the radiant heat from the fireball would ignite everything flammable several miles in every direction. You begin to understand why these things become so intricate to listen to understand, to think about. It's profound. I'm sitting here looking at images of city, waterways, bridges, ballparks, all of which would be instantly gone. Gone. Now we're going to go to a break in a minute. And we're going to pick up on this story when we come back. And we're going to talk about what would happen to other things. The people, the buildings, the government, etc., etc., etc. Got to bear with me. Got a lot going on with this. Should have given you that before. I'm sorry, honey. We're going to go to a break. We'll be back and pick up where we left off. Stay with us.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worst. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed and who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first.
Interesting piece from Merle Haggard talking about need to build America first. And yet amongst the things we're talking about is the destruction of America today. Before the break, we talked about after this fireball takes place at the Pentagon. Traveling at the speed of light, the radiating heat from the fireball ignites everything flammable several miles in each direction. Curtains, paper, books, wood fences, clothing, dry leaves explode into flames and become kindling for a great firestorm that begins to consume 100 or more square mile area that prior to that flash of light was the beating heart of American governance and home to 6 million people. And the declassified documents also predict a horrific death for 35,000 people watching a game at the Nationals Park. with their clothes set to burn to their bodies and their top layer of skin singed off, leaving only bloody dermis exposed. Several hundred feet northwest of the Pentagon, all 639 acres of Arlington National Cemetery, including the 400,000 sets of bones and gravestones honoring the war dead, the 3,800 buried African-American freed people, the visitors paying respects on that late winter afternoon, the groundskeepers mowing lawns, the arborists tending trees, tour guides touring, the white-gloved members of the old guard keeping watch over the tomb of the unknowns, would all instantly transformed into charred human figurines, into soot. Those incinerated are spared the horror that begins to be inflicted on the 1 to 2 million people gravely injured but not yet dead. And across the Potomac River, a mile to the northeast, the marble walls and columns of the Lincoln and Jefferson Memorials superheat, split, burst apart, disintegrate. And the steel and stone bridges and highways connecting these historic monuments to the surrounding environs heave and collapse. And to the south, across Interstate 395, the spacious glass-walled fashion center at Pentagon City with its abundance of stores filled with high-end clothing brands, household goods, restaurants, offices, food courts, and the adjacent Ritz-Carlton Pentagon City Hotel would all be obliterated. Ceiling joists, 2x4s, escalators, chandeliers, rugs, furniture, mannequins, dogs, squirrels, people all burst into flames. And that would have been 3 seconds since the initial blast. As we mentioned, there's this baseball game going on 2.5 miles due west of Nationals Park. Closed on the majority of the 35,000 people watching the game catch fire. As I mentioned, those who don't quickly burn to death suffer intense third-degree burns. Third-degree burns require immediate specialized care, often limb amputation to prevent death. And maybe in Nationals Park there might be a few thousand who somehow survived. They were inside buying hot dogs or using the bathrooms. But all now desperately need a burn treatment center, but there's only 10 specialized burn beds in the entire Washington metropolitan area. At the MedStar Washington's Hospital Burn Center in central D.C. And because that facility was about 5 miles northeast of the Pentagon, it no longer functions, if it even exists. Within seconds, the thermal radiation has deeply burned the skin on roughly 1 million people, and 90% of them will die. Most wouldn't make it more than a few steps from where they're standing when the bomb detonates. They become what civil defense experts referred to back in the 1950s when those grim calculations first came to be as dead when found. I know many of you are sitting back there saying, Bennett, why are you sharing all this? Because sometimes it needs to be done. Because sometimes we need to face the considerations. We have enemies around the world. We'll be talking about one of those enemies big time tomorrow. And unfortunately, they've been allowed to continue to come into this country on a continual basis. We've got Chinese invading this country. They're not coming here with wives and kids. These are men. They're taking control of schools. They're taking control of factories, farms. We've got questionable people from south of this country, South America, coming in here. What's their purpose? To get something for nothing? To get something that's free because it's just for me? We're inviting the enemy into this country because we've got ignorant, stupid people that we continue to elect over and over and over again. I go back to this story, this potential future. We're down the road at Joint Base Anacostia Bowling, a 1,000-acre military facility across the Potomac to the southeast. There would be another 17,000 victims, including almost everyone working at the Defense Intelligence Agency headquarters, the White House Communications Agency headquarters, the U.S. Coast Guard Station, Washington, the Marine One helicopter hangar, scores of other heavily guarded federal facilities that cater to the nation's security. At the National Defense University, a majority of 4,000 students would be dead or dying. And so there's no shortness of tragic irony. The university, which is funded by the Pentagon, founded on America's 200th birthday, is where officers go to learn military tactics to achieve U.S. national security dominance around the world. And the university is not the only military-themed higher learning institution obliterated in that nuclear first strike. The Eisenhower School for National Security and Resource Strategy, the National War College, the Inter-American Defense College, the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, all immediately cease to exist. You know, humans created the nuclear weapon in the 20th century to save the world from evil. And now here we sit in the 21st century, and this nuclear weapon is about to destroy it. The science behind the bomb is profound. Embedded in the thermonuclear flash of light are two pulses of thermal radiation. The first pulse lasts a fraction of a second, after which comes the second pulse, which lasts several seconds and causes human skin to ignite, to burn. And the light pulses are silent. What follows is a thunderous roar. And that this, the intense heat generated by this kind of nuclear explosion creates a high pressure wave that moves out from its center point like a tsunami. A giant wall of highly compressed air traveling faster than the speed of sound mows down the people, hurls others into the air, bursts lungs, eardrums, sucks bodies up, spits them out. In general, large buildings are destroyed by the change in air pressure, while people and objects such as trees, utility poles are destroyed by the wind. That's been noted by an archivist who compiles these morbid statistics for the Atomic Archive. As the nuclear fireball grows, the shock front delivers catastrophic destruction, bulldozing everything in its path for 3 miles, and the air behind the blast wave accelerates, creating winds that reach several hundred miles an hour, extraordinary speeds that are difficult to fathom. In 2012, Hurricane Sandy, which caused $69.8 billion worth of damage and killed 233 people from the Caribbean to Canada, had maximum sustained winds of roughly 80 miles an hour. The highest wind speed recorded on Earth is 253 miles per hour at a remote weather station in Australia. And that which is not crushed by the blast would be torn apart by this whipping wind. Objects as small as computers and cement blocks and as large as 18-wheeler trucks and double-decker tour buses become airborne like tennis balls. And the nuclear fireball that has consumed everything in an initial 1.1-mile radius now rises up from the Earth at a rate of 250 to 350 feet per second. And the formation of the iconic mushroom cloud begins. Its massive cap and stem, made up of incarcerated people and civilization's debris, transmutes from a red to a brown to an orange hue. And next comes a deadly reverse suction effect with objects, cars, people, light poles, street signs, parking meters, all getting sucked back into the center of the burning inferno and consumed by flame. 60 seconds pass. Time is running out. The mushroom cap and the stem, now grayish white, rises up 5, then 10 miles from ground zero. The cap grows too, stretching out 20, 30 miles across, billowing, blowing further out. Eventually it reaches the troposphere, higher than commercial flights. Radioactive particles then spew across everything below as fallout, raining back down on Earth. You know, a nuclear bomb produces a witch's brew of radioactive products which are also entrained in the cloud. And that was a warning given us by Carl Sagan decades ago. Astrophysicist Carl Sagan. But now more than 1 million people would be dead or dying, and fewer than 2 minutes have passed since detonation. Now the inferno begins. Oh, this is all different. This is all different than the initial fireball. It's a mega fire beyond measure. Gas lines explode one after the next, acting like giant flamethrowers, spewing steady streams of fire. Tanks containing flammable materials burst open. Chemical factories explode. Pilot lights on water heaters and furnaces act like torch lighters, setting anything not already burning alight. And collapsed buildings become giant ovens. Open gaps in floors and roofs behave like chimneys. Carbon dioxide from the firestorm sinks down and settles into the metro's subway tunnels, asphyxiating passengers in their seats. People seeking shelter in basements and other spaces below ground vomit. They convulse. They become comatose. They die. And anyone above ground who would be looking directly at the blast, in some cases as far as 13 miles away, will be blinded. 15 miles out from the Pentagon, cars and buses crash into one another. Asphalt streets turn to liquid from intense heat, trapping survivors as if caught in molten lava or quicksand. Hurricane force winds fuel hundreds of fires into thousands of fires into millions. And 10 miles out, hot burning ash and flaming wind-borne debris ignite new fires, conflating one after another. And all of Washington, D.C. became one, or would become one, mega inferno. And now 8, maybe 9 minutes have passed since the initial. 10 and 12 miles out from ground zero, survivors shuffle in shock like the almost dead, unsure of just what happened. Desperate to escape. Tens of thousands of people would have ruptured lungs. Crows, sparrows, pigeons overhead catch fire, drop from the sky as if it's raining birds. There's no electricity, no phone service, no 9/11. The electromagnetic pulse of the bomb obliterated all radio, internet, and television. Cars with electric ignition systems cannot restart. Water stations cannot pump water. It's all saturated with lethal levels of radiation. The entire area is a no-go zone. Not for days will the rare survivors realize that help is not coming. And those who would somehow manage to escape death from the blast, the shockwave, and the firestone suddenly realize an insidious truth about nuclear war, that they will be entirely on their own. Former Federal Emergency Management Agency Director Craig Fugate said that their only hope for survival would be to figure out how to self-survive. That begins a fight for food and water. How and why do U.S. defense scientists know such hideous things and with exacting precision? How does the U.S. government know so many nuclear effects-related facts while the general public remains blind? This is simply amazing to me. The answer is as grotesque as the questions themselves, because for all these years, since the end of the Second World War, the U.S. government has been preparing for and rehearsing plans for a general nuclear war. Is all of this possible? I fear, yes. I hope I'm not giving people heart attacks. Just some reality stuff to think about. We continue to allow the enemy to enter this country. And that enemy is threatening in many respects. And tomorrow, we're going to discuss some of that. Oh, yeah, I know. Some of you won't tune in because, oh my God, he's going to go down this path again. My reason for going down this path is to get you to think for yourself. I've told you this before. I'm not here to entertain. If you were entertained by this, that's your issue. Yeah, this is harsh stuff to think about. Very, very harsh stuff to think about. A nuclear war? But, oh, we surely must be able to stop that from happening. I've lost track of the number of illegals that have entered this country. And those that have escaped. Those that have been arrested for murder and other violent crimes, that have gone to jail, one case, 8 times, and has been deported numerous times. And somehow the SOB keeps getting back. He keeps coming back in here committing more crimes. Do you get it?
Oh, but, you know, with everything going on, well, we don't have enough manpower to do this, that, and the other thing. Bullshit.
Maybe the manpower you've got's questionable. When do we stop running from this nonsense? At what point in time do we stop the enemy from coming in here? Well, we've got more than just one of them. But we just leave the door open willingly. Having little knowledge or understanding of who these individual people are, what their real beliefs are, what it is they're bringing in the door. Look at some of these characters we've got elected sitting in Congress. This is horrific. A nuclear World War III is guaranteed to leave at minimum 2 billion dead. I'll see you tomorrow night.
Don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do. Till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know. Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.